session number 26546, Reel 40.
Major Highfield, Reel 14. We're talking about when you went to sea aboard HMS with AC-21 on an exercise. What happened then? What form did the exercise take?
Well, to manoeuvre the whole fleet, because there was a landing planned, the next offensive operation to be in Malaya, which eventually was called Operation Zipper. Anyway, the fleet was made up of these 8 or 9 carriers. 4 of them had Seafire squadrons on board, and 4 of them had a Hellcat fighter. Khedive had Hellcats, and in fact, they were, I think, superior to the Seafires. Very strongly built, and they had a very good radius designed for Pacific warfare, and the pilots were very happy. They had a very large radial engine in front of them with 24 cylinders, whereas the Seafire was quite vulnerable on landings, not so robust, and also if they got a direct hit, the air cooling system punctured. That was the end. They had to pull out of that. They couldn't take punishment. We completed the exercise, came back again, and later on we sailed on to undertake Operation Zipper. By this time it was unknown whether there would be any resistance or not. But we proceeded to the area for the fleet to occupy, between Sumatra, north of Sumatra, and close, about 40 miles off the main Malayan coast. And the operation went ahead on a full wartime basis, but was unopposed.
The war had just ended, hadn't it?
It was just ending. And so we then proceeded down to Singapore, and certain of the troops were certain of the Navy took part in a surrender ceremony in Singapore on the main squares in the centre of the main grass section in the centre of the place. We then returned to Ceylon, and very quickly after that the Americans asked for their carriers back, as this was Lend-Lease. The carrier made a trip to South Africa to deliver some troops who had to get to deliver some troops and then return, and then it had to go back to America. I was left with my two clerks, and eventually we were sent by air, Dakotas, hopping round the place to Singapore, and I arrived in Singapore to help with the dealing with the congestion there of the returning prisoners of war, which was nearly over, and all sorts of European nationalities coming out of the Dutch East Indies. I worked there from October to December, meeting aircraft coming in mainly at Salita Airport, and using 3-ton lorries with Indian drivers and Jewish ATS girls to take them to all the various camps that had been set up on Singapore Island.
Taking the POWs?
No, they weren't. The POWs had more or less passed through.
So these were the Dutch nationals?
These were Dutch nationals, mainly. But there were quite a few, and I can remember Swiss, And there were something like 20 or 30 camps all the way around Singapore Island. This eventually tailed off. I was sharing in the mess with one of my friends I'd made friends with was the military secretary's a major in the military secretary's department. So I said, I want another job. Tell me what you've got. Finally, a job came up as staff captain in the RA headquarters of the 82nd West African Division, who were then sited, concentrating in near Rangoon in Burma. And I flew from Singapore to Burma to take over the job of staff captain RA.
And how did you settle into these duties?
Well, everything really was concerned with running down the strength of units and returning people. There was the scheme of releasing all the officers and men who had come in. You were given an age group thing was worked out for you. I'd been staff captain for about 4 weeks when the brigade major got his group release and went, and I took over his job.
Were you actually promoted to major, or just took over the major's job? If you see what I mean.
I was promoted. The job of a brigade is brigade major, Royal Artillery, to the division, and carried the rank with it.
Now, what duties were you doing as brigade major, or was it still mainly related to demobilisation?
It's mainly related to movement and that. We eventually moved down to Rangoon, and I left them after about June. I'd been with them some 6 months, and I then got a posting, a cross posting, to an Indian division who were sighted in Malaya, and went by air to join them, landing at Penang, and they were, in fact, the headquarters of the RA was at a place called Ipoh in Pera State. That's P-E-R-A-K. And I took up the job of DAA and QMG on this headquarters.
So, what?
In January.
That's January
46.
So what exactly did that entail?
Well, as the title tells you, it included all the adjutant general's type of work and also the quartermaster's general type of work, control by the headquarters of the units under its command. There would be a brigade major who would be doing the operational and G side of the job. The division I joined was 7th Indian Division, who had been in Bangkok for the initial takeover from the Japanese and had now returned to Malaya. They were a very experienced division. Who had taken part in the Kohima battles and also in the Arakan. Their sign was a golden arrow. I was with them for about 6 months. And
what were you doing? Anything in particular happened, or was it just this sort of routine duties?
We had 5 major units under command, including the Seaforth Highlanders, who were a bit uncontrollable in the local towns. However, eventually the 7th Indian Division moved back to India to demobilise and so on. And another Indian division came to take over, which was the 23rd Indian Division, and they had been in Sumatra. And so I took over the same job.
Still in Malaya.
In this new, in the headquarters. The CRA, who I had to work with, was a formidable character, Brigadier Scott, and he was a very fierce man indeed. He had been involved in high staff work in 14th Army, but quite honestly, I think he would have done well in the Prussian Army. He was a very efficient officer, but very, very hard. I can remember, too, that he started to write all the confidential reports for, due at that time of the year, for the senior officers of the major units, and I had to handle all this work, which was confidential, and some of the things he wrote were really very stringent indeed. Perhaps if I use that word, that covers it. And eventually he said, I think, bring a report in, because I better write one on you, which he did. And I had seen all these reports going through. It was the worst confidential report I had had. But knowing the man, I didn't query the thing at all. I signed it and put it back on his desk. Right. Eventually, he was given a job to make up a program of military tattoos to keep the people amused and the regiments busy. He did this very well, and with various Indian troops about, there were some remarkable things that we could put on. And then I can remember Indians climbing a greasy pole. These things were held at night, and we had military bands as well, so that was quite effective and very impressive on the local population who came to watch it. The Gurkhas took part and acted the role of the Japanese, who in little incidents, storming a strong point and so on. Eventually, 23rd Indian was to go back to India. I had to take the HQRA back. I had a Nike, a corporal, and about 15 men, and we went by sea around to Madras, where I had to present the documents and get them passed before I too had to return to UK, going across by train to Bombay and then taking a ship home. And this was July 1947.
Had you enjoyed your time out in Malaya and,
Yes, indeed, I had. Experienced various things. I experienced leeches, because we used to try and go out with shoot some duck in Malaya, and round the lakes where the duck operated. You put on two pairs of trousers, one back to front, and when you got back to the mess, you took them off, and you would find leeches that crawled through your boot holes, boot lace holes in the boots, and crawled up as high as your knee. You then applied the lighted end of a cigarette so that they dropped off without leaving the head or their jaws in you. But I enjoyed the staff work, and I had it in mind that I would opt to go to staff college.
Now, what was your status? Were you expecting to be demobilised, or were you a regular? I mean, you were a regular, but I mean, that didn't mean you had to stay in after the war, I presume. What were you thinking about your career at the time?
Oh, I was a regular, and I was going on with my career. With the artillery, you basically take two courses. Either you become a gunnery expert and attend gunnery courses at the schools of artillery at Lark Hill, etc. Or you take a staff course when you vary between posting to a staff job for 2 years and then back to regimental duty. I had decided that I would take the staff course. I had enjoyed the staff work, and so I settled down in a training. I lost my rank on return to UK. I was captain because you had to do 13 years then to be automatically major, and went to a training regiment at Oswestry on the Welsh border. There's a whole brigade of four training regiments was set up to deal with the National Service intake, and this is what I did for the next 18 months.
So 1947 through into 48, or even into 49, actually.
Well, into 48.
And did you enjoy your time there?
It was a shock coming back to England, very basic, but everything seemed to revolve around food rationing, and rather everybody was very tired after the long war. But we in fact took in 400 national servicemen on a Thursday, I think it was, and we discharged them just 13 days later on a Wednesday, before the next lot of 400 came in. We kitted them, we gave them some basic training, and then we sent them on to more specialised units that would train them as drivers or signallers or whatever was decided.
You couldn't have trained them much in that time. I mean, this sounds like just drill. Was there much more to it other than drill? Or?
There wasn't. I was battery captain. There were two batteries in this regiment. I was battery captain, so my main job was having all the kit, battle dress, boots, everything issued to them and fitting them up that way. The drill was done mainly by the sergeants of each squad, and they had a drill competition at the end of passing out, which gave a certain spur to the whole thing. But it was an extraordinary sausage machine process.
So you're there until 48.
During this time, I sat, worked over the winter, studying for the Staff College exam, which took place in the spring of 48. About October, I think, I got a notification that I had passed the Staff College entrance exam. A week later, I got another notification that I was to go immediately on the next course, starting in January 49. The age limits for the Staff College were 28 to 32, and it was the youngest. I was the youngest age I could go to Staff College. We had had some encouraging talks from the general in charge of Western Command, who was Brian Horrocks at that time, and he sat in on all our tactical lectures and gave brief talks of his experience in war, which was quite fascinating.
Now, the Staff College, was this at Andover at the time?
The Staff College is at Camberley.
Sorry. No. And, well, how was it? Tell me about the course. What was the course like? I mean, how was it organised?
It's very highly organised. 240 officers, including some from overseas armies, do a year's course. And the best people, the instructors, are all... the teaching is done on the basis of one instructor to about 10 pupils. And it's... you really work hard. You've got the best people instructing you. You've got a very good, promising general in charge of the Staff College, and his brigadier deputy, and you learn all the latest techniques, and it's jolly hard work.
Was there anything new that you were learning? I mean, new sort of thinking coming through, or was it still pretty much what you were used to?
It was fascinating. A week after I'd been told I was to go on the course, they rang me up and said, would you like to go to one of the, have your name put forward for one of the Dominion staff colleges instead? On this occasion, I rang up my last brigadier, the fearsome Brigadier Scott, who was then doing a job at Northern Command, and asked his advice, which was, go to the staff college, you will meet there 200 plus officers of your own seniority, who you may meet forever after in the army. It is the most important and valuable thing from it. If you want to go to a Dominion, do it at another time.
And so you were, anything else about your time at Staff College?
Staff College, at the end of the first 3 months, they had what they called a telephone battle. You're divided into divisions of about 60 people. The list went up of all the jobs one had to do in the division. We guessed who was going to be the divisional commander, who was a very experienced officer from the 5th Inniskillen Dragoon Guards, who had taken part in tank battles in Normandy and been second in command of a regiment. When I came to look down the staff positions, I was down as the GSO1, and my mind went back to the report that Brigadier Scott had written on me. And there's a little box which says, what would you recommend this officer could do in time of war? And he had put in GSO1, which I knew was a bit over the top, but the military executive branch knew what his reports were like, and they were going to test me out.
And how did you do as GSO1? Explain what it was, because the people won't know.
Well, you are in charge of the generals. You've got to transmit his orders. You've got to keep in touch with all the information coming in and see that he gets briefed on the important things. And I only did average, I think, on that. Anyway, it was interesting to see how the military secretary's branch worked on these confidential reports.
Anything else about the course?
I finished the course. And then you waited to see where you were going. And I was told I was going to be posted to Rhein Army headquarters in the rank of a major, as GSO2 RA, to the brigadier who was the senior gunner in Germany, and to take up the position in January.
And that's January 1950.
That's right.
Now, what do you remember? I mean, we're dealing with things. What was the job like? What do you remember of your time with the army in Germany?
The posting was a very interesting one. There were two divisions in Germany at the time, and we had something like 10, 12 regiments, and the name of every officer was on a board in my office. And I was particularly interested in the way officers were posted as they finished probably 2 years service and more came out. I had very constant touch with AG6 branch in the War Office, which is the artillery branch, and the BRA would decide all the senior ranks and what he thought was the right thing to do. And it was a most interesting time. I had three BRAs during my 2 years there.
Brigadier Royal Artillery.
Brigadier Royal Artillery.
What were they like? How did you get on with them?
And in fact, a division was formed and brought out to Rhein Army at that time. And we had to form one or two units from scratch, which we did by taking a battery out of an existing regiment and to form the colonel of the new regiment. But 11th Armoured Division came out and was in place by the time I'd finished my job there. after that, I returned.
How did you get on with the Germans? It's not still quite close to the war, 6 years afterwards.
Unfortunately, there was still a barrier between fraternising with the Germans. You were not supposed to do too much of this. And it was a pity, because I could have improved my German a bit. But we did have German servants. We had a nice quarter. And my first child was born in Germany. My daughter, my eldest.
What were the family quarters like? Because we're quite interested in the way families fit into the army.
They were very cleverly designed. By this time, I was serving with a regiment in Germany, a heavy attack regiment in the area of Oldenburg. And
so you didn't get your married quarters until you joined 77th HAA regiment.
Well, I was married when I was at Ryan Army headquarters, and we had taken over houses, rather difficult quarter situation there. But when I went to the regiment, which was 52-53, we had a new quarter. And this had been built in conjunction with the Germans, so it could be split into two flats when the army moved away and no longer required them.
And what were these married quarters like?
They're all German quarters. Houses seemed to have cellar system, and so we had cellars. And it was extremely pleasant.
Did your wife feel comfortable there? I mean, was she made welcome by the army? I mean, was it a reasonable existence for her as well?
She was also a serving officer in the ATS, and we had met at Staff College at a dance. She eventually was posted to Ryan Army headquarters, and we got together, finally got married, and, as I say, produced a first child.
Now, you were a battery captain first, although a major, you battery captain, and then adjutant. What do you remember of your time with? It's 77th Heavy ACAC Regiment.
That's right.
What do you remember of your time with them? Any incident happen? Were you always at Oldenburg? You know.
Well, the actual barracks was at a place called Delmenhorst, but Oldenburg was the headquarters of the brigade. I always ran the rugby team. We had quite a lot of exercises. I can remember one exercise going all the way back into Holland.
Tell me about that, just a bit about it. What was the exercise like? How did it work?
Well, it was to move the brigade as a movement exercise. I remember, as I was adjutant, I had to ride a motorbike on that occasion behind the column, behind the leading truck with the brigade major in it, and drop off fleets of Donars to block off the side rows for the whole column. It was a complete night march, and we finished up back somewhere close to Arnhem, carried out an occupation, and then moved all the way back again.
It went reasonably well then?
It went reasonably well. It was strange to be back in the territory that one had a certain knowledge of.
And going the other way.